The NAACP is holding its annual convention in Las Vegas this week, which is a first for the organization. But although the setting is new, the issues are not. NAACP leaders say voting rights for African Americans and other minorities are under attack. And leaders also have raised concerns about violence against young African American men like Trayvon Martin. Here in Nevada, conservative activists have proposed laws to require picture identification for voters. But there are other issues that may be more pressing. Less than half of the African American students who enroll in Nevada schools make it to graduation, according to Grad Nation. And unemployment among African Americans is still much higher than it is among Asians and whites. We have a panel of African American leaders who are joining us to talk about the state of the community. And we'll begin with writer and activist Trish Duran, who's also the author of Beyond the Glimmering Lights. Trish, welcome back. It's good to have you here.
Thank you. It's glad to be here.
Conservative activist Sharon Angle proposed a ballot measure that would have required picture IDs for voting in Nevada. How do you think that would have affected the African American vote here had that gone forward?
You know, it's interesting how all of a sudden the ID has to be necessary, as though they have found substantial evidence that the IDs without the pictures have been either false, falsified, or fake. But one thing they do know for sure is that as far as our history is concerned, we have more blacks, more minorities, more seniors that have registered to vote it for the first time in our history. Now, that for sure they know. This other photo and all that, I'm not sure where their evidence of justifying that is coming from.
Yeah, why are African Americans more affected by this than other groups? Why do so many lack picture identification of this sort?
Lack of knowledge, lack of transportation to get proper identification. Most of the identification they have is to survive. Photo IDs is something that is mostly for driver's license. Most of them don't have probably a car or have the need or have their driver's license revoked or what have you. Doesn't mean that they're not eligible voters. So therefore, if you even go into any kind of courthouse, you can see the majority of who's has run-ins with the law. And they know that.
Also with us is Assemblywoman Dina Neal, who represents North Las Vegas. Assemblywoman, thanks for joining us and welcome back.
Good morning.
In addition to serving in the legislature, you're also the daughter of the state's first black senator, Joe Neal. There have been a lot of successful African-American politicians in Nevada since your father broke through that barrier. We've even got a black congressman, 4th District Representative Stephen Horsford. Is race still a barrier to public office in Nevada?
I don't know if it's a barrier. I think it's one of the – it's an issue you have to navigate. I think you can be a politician who represents all people. And do I feel that you have to present yourself in a way that you appear not so black? Yes.
Help us understand this. Say a little more about that.
For example, I know I can't walk my district – and I have full-fledged braids on, that I'm going to turn off some voters in my district. And I think that because there is a way that you need to present yourself, because you try to move yourself away from identity, right? But it really is about presenting yourself for all people in your district so that they can see you and the issues that you're trying to represent and present. And if you could get the perceptions out of the way, right? Because the reality is human beings have perceptions. They do. If you can get that, knock that out of the way, then you can successfully move through without a lot of other things going on in your mind. And it may just all be in my head, but I do strongly believe.
So you do things like, literally, things like change your hairstyle if you're going to walk in.
That's right. I change my hairstyle and my clothes.
It doesn't seem to me to be the kind of thing that many of us would feel we had to do. Unless we're wearing torn jeans and maybe an old T-shirt or something. But you need to do that.
I think that when you hit, number one, the door is a very personal place for everyone. So even I have a lot of young African-American males who are my walkers. And I make sure, I'm like, you better wear my campaign shirt. Do not have on anything else, because I need you to walk into a neighborhood, number one, associated with me, but I don't need any drama, and I need people to respect who you are and to open the door to you and not have a perception about who you could be.
Even as an elected official of the state, I mean, is this kind of a analogous to the whole notion of the talk? You know, talking with 12 and 13-year-old African-American males saying, here's what you do and here's how you should behave in certain situations if you encounter, say, police.
Yeah.
I mean, that really is, it's a real issue.
I mean, I've had a friend who, he dresses very clean cut, very preppy, like he'll wear plaid belts and penny loafers. And he has been challenged by the police, and he drives a Rover, and he was asked, what are you doing? And he was picking lint off of his pants, and he was like, I'm picking lint off of my pants. And then the officer treated him like he was a criminal. He was just like, well, I didn't know if you were trying to retrieve something. And he was like, I'm getting lint off of my pants, literally.
How does this compare with some of the experiences your father had? I mean, you must have exchanged stories over time.
We've exchanged a lot of stories. I think people have a revisionist memory of my dad. I think my dad very much fought inequality. And the stories that I remember, some of the early on white female Democrats who said, you know, when your dad was elected, there was no place for him to hang his coat in the Senate room. They had to find a place for him to hang his coat. It didn't exist. And so who he was, I think the strength that he exhibited in the 33 years, I think came from identity, right? You're forced to be who you are. And then you have this innate sense that inequality is going to be a presence in everything that you do. And it's a trigger for why you may fight. It's just inequality.
If your father had to face 1,000 petty indignities like that as the state's first African-American as senator, are you facing as many indignities or has the number lessened?
I think it's lessened. I think that people – I'll give you an example. I had a legislative hearing, and it was a minority legislation this past session, and it was very hard for me to do because I knew that – regardless of what I presented, there was already a general feeling that, why are you trying to bring these old issues back up? Why are you trying to equalize minorities in this setting? And I said to myself, I have to present the facts. I don't have any other choice. And so I laid out Supreme Court justice studies that laid out that there was inequality, that there was socioeconomic stratification within Nevada. And I put our own history in the record so I didn't have to prove from some personal belief or feeling that I used our own documents to support what I was saying. And yet and still, I had to persuade and push and make people believe that what I was saying was a real issue in 2013. And it was very difficult because I'm black, but that doesn't mean I want to be the black assemblywoman. I want to deal with issues that are unfair to people. And if I could just deal with issues that are unfair to people, you're doing me a favor. But I felt this really strong, crazy feeling because I was like, I don't want to do 30 years of this burden. I don't want to fight a problem from 30 years ago. But yet here it is in my lap, and I have to push this issue and make people see that this is still real, that we actually let some things drop. And that was very difficult for me. And I didn't want to be labeled as, oh, she's just this black girl trying to fight these issues. I didn't. I was just like, just see me as Dina. And inequality is a thing that turns me on.
Now, also with us on the panel today, State Senator Pat Spearman. Senator Spearman, welcome.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. You're the person on the panel, I guess, would be newest to Nevada. You spent some time in Texas in the South. To a certain extent, I guess you could say you have something of an outsider's eyes. You're seeing it with Nevada with fresh eyes. How does this state compare when it comes to addressing the concerns of African-American citizens?
Well, you know, first of all, a lot of my time was spent, most of my life was spent in the military. So I traveled not only extensively in the United States, but also outside the United States. And, you know, I just want to say this. I want to dovetail on what Assemblywoman Neal said. I think that it would be a lot easier for people to understand the issues and understand the inequity and understand how people are trying to put laws in place that will set us back if they simply go back to the Reconstruction era. Because much of what is happening now with the voter ID laws, with Stand Your Ground, all of that is rooted in Jim Crow. And it's rooted in Jim Crow because once the slaves were emancipated, then the worldview of slave owners had to change. And my grandmother used to say all the time, the slaves were emancipated, but the slave owners were not. And so you have to emancipate people from their prejudices, from the things that their preconceived notions, from the things that they would look at someone and immediately identify them as this or that. So let me start there. With respect to Nevada, there aren't a lot of new issues. You see the same paradigm exists worldwide. It exists worldwide. So it's racism. And a lot of people are afraid of that word, but in many times, some of these actions are rooted in racism. It's prejudice. It's people who want to hang on to the past. And, you know, I listen to some people say, you know, well, we want to take our country back. And I'm like, back to where? Back to where? Where do you want to take it back to? Oh, back to the good old days? What do the good old days mean? What does that mean for you? Because the good old days for many of the people who say that weren't the good old days for me. I grew up in a time where, you know, in the South, you knew they hated you. But in the North, you know, the prejudice was more covert. I grew up in a time when I remember in Nashville, Tennessee, wanting to drink from a water fountain. And my mother grabbed me by the nape of my neck and she snatched me so hard. It really caused my neck to kind of shake. And she said, no, don't do that. And I'm like, why? She said, you can't drink from that one. You have to drink from this one. And the one she pointed to was one that a gentleman, I saw him walk by and he'd spit in it. I said, I don't want to drink from that one. She said, well, you have to. Don't you see the sign? You know, and there was a sign on this side over the water fountain I wanted to drink from that said white. And on the side that she said I needed to drink from, it said C-O-L-O-R-E-D. And, you know, I'm 6, 7 years old, something like that. And so I'm color red. I'm not color red. So why do I have to do that? So I know that racism, isms, as it were, racism, sexism, you know, whatever it is. I know that those things don't change when people have deeply rooted beliefs and they want to hold on to them. The mechanisms by which they show that or where they demonstrate that may change. But in terms of the things that Nevadans feel, I believe that it's something that's universal, and we as people have got to get over it. We are all God's children, all God's children.
We are talking with a panel of African-American women in the wake of the beginning of the NAACP's annual convention, which is in Las Vegas this week. It's the first time that they've held the convention here. We're talking with Senator Pat Spearman, Democrat from District 1 in the State House, Assemblywoman Dena Neal, who is a Democrat representing District 7, and Trish John, who is an activist and the author of Beyond the Glimmering Lights. If you are an African-American and you've been here in Nevada for a while, tell us about your experience. Are things getting better? Or do you feel like the community in Nevada is stuck in a rut? What needs to happen? And for you, what are the most pressing issues in your life? If you would like to join our conversation, we would like to hear from you. You can call us now at 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. You can also tweet us at KNPR News. And you can post your thoughts at our website. That's knprnews.org. As I had mentioned in the beginning of the conversation, graduation rates for African Americans in this state are pretty dismal. The group Grad Nation says it's about 48% graduating from high school, which means more drop out than don't. That is the lowest of all ethnic groups that are being tracked. And for each of you, Tristan, I'll start with you. What is the first thing that needs to happen to improve those numbers?
You know, it starts in the house, in the homes, and as I see a lot of the community themselves, it does take a whole village to bring up some of these kids. So many of them don't have a lot of hope. We graduate from Las Vegas, the high school, for what? For what? I can get a job in the hotels with the GED. I can get a job in the warehouses with without a GED, without a high school diploma. So the incentive of finishing high school to do what in Las Vegas is not there. There is no inspiration or motivation. They see their parents who have little education, who have jobs. So the role models, the reasons for wanting to go and get your master's, and then you go to the school district, for example, and everyone who does have a master, we no longer want to pay you for that. You're going to go back to the basic scale. So every time when there is some type of inspiration or spark, there's also dismal action that occurs to bring down that reasons of why. Why do I need to finish school?
Is this, a cousin, if you will, of the long ago adage of Jesse Jackson, keep hope alive?
Oh, God, I mean, do we have to talk about Jesse Jackson?
No, we do not have to talk about him. Definitely not. But, I mean, the whole notion of keeping hope alive, as I'm hearing you talk about
exactly.
this, you're graduating high school. And for what?
For what?
And it sounds like there's almost, for a lot of people, there may be no hope.
Right. I mean, I teach adult education, and so many of them have jobs without high school diplomas. A lot of them have reasons now. Their parents have a lot of kids that they had to babysit, so they had to drop out of school. There was an ailing parent. There's a lot of reasons. There's a guy that works in Aliante that drives all the way over to go to class every day. He doesn't have a high school diploma, but he has a job. So you tell me, they see all of these people, and when times get rough, now a lot of their decisions are made when they're like in the eighth grade, seventh grade. So when they get to ninth grade, it's just a downhill slope. Las Vegas doesn't have a lot of corporate professional idols or inspiration to want to finish. I can take my time. I can go back. I can do this whenever. I can help my parents out for now. So they have more of that than they do of get that high school diploma, because if you do that, then this will happen. They don't have a lot of that.
They don't have a lot of that.
No.
Senator Pat Spearman, what needs to be done as a starting point to get these numbers up?
Well, you know, I'm gonna put on my pastor's hat for just a minute. And one of the things that I see is we have too many children who live in the state of no. It's not just no hope, no love, no role models, no money. They live in the state of no. And I think that we as adults, I always say that once you get to the party, you must remember who got you there, who brought you there, and you have got to create an invitation to bring others. And so when you talk about looking at students who live in the state of no, no aspirations, no hope, et cetera, when you talk about students who live in that state, I think one of the things, and it's not just Las Vegas, but I think one of the things that has got to change from a pedagogical standpoint in the education system, one of the things that has to change is we have got to somehow make sure that people understand the importance of cultural competency. Cultural competency. People learn differently, and it's not just about ethnicity. It's not just about socioeconomic strata, but people learn differently. There are students who have different learning styles, ADHD, ADD, you know, ED. So all of those things, and they require a different type of mentoring, tutoring, if you will, and tutelage. And unless we start realizing that many students who come from communities of color, They learn in a different way because they have experienced different things. Students who come from poor neighborhoods, they learn differently because they have experienced different things. And so we've got to make sure that we go back to the place where it's not just teaching a subject. As teachers, you have to teach the student, and you've got to understand where they are and meet them where they are, and then explain to them why the information you're trying to give to them is important. Let me just give you a real quick story. When I taught in Norfolk, Virginia, my last year of college, and I taught in an inner city school, and at the last period class, I taught history. Last period was all the football players. And they felt like, well, I'm going to go to the pros, so why do I need history? And so what I decided to do was, you know, their first assignment was to give me the history of the NFL and then pick out their favorite player and do the research and tell me how many other people in that person's class actually made it to college ball, and actually once they made it to college, how many of those were actually drafted into the NFL? So you got to meet the students where they are and understand that everyone comes from a different place, and cultural competency is extremely important.
I'll bet that got their attention.
It did. It did.
Assemblywoman Tina Neal, just a little bit of time, and then we've actually got some people who are waiting to join the conversation. But what needs to happen?
I think, you know, people talk a lot about early childhood, but I really do believe that it starts somewhere around that second and third grade year. I mean, I had the benefit of being in a fourth grade classroom this past semester, and what I realized that we had some fourth grade students that literally had already given up on themselves, and they had decided that they were not good enough to go forward. I mean, and we were teaching and trying to build self-esteem into a 10-year-old and make them believe in themselves and their abilities. And I think that teacher support is super important, building more supports into the school system so that when the teacher teaches, there is an additional support there so they can do their job better to take on the seven other issues that they're encountering.
In terms of that self-esteem, is that related to the expulsion rates for African-American students? I mean, there's something like three times more likely to be expelled in Clark County schools than white students. Does that have a little something to do with it?
I think there is a correlation. I think depending on the school environment that you're in and who the leadership is in that school, there is a higher rate of certain types of children being penalized for issues that maybe a non-colored child may not be penalized for. And they feel like, well, they did the same thing, yet I got pulled out, yet I got in-house suspension. I mean, I know kids who've been tardy and they had in-house suspension all day. And I'm like, well, what were they learning in in-house suspension when they were a minute off the clock? How are you actually promoting a school environment, a learning environment? It's not a school environment, a learning environment, when they're in-house all day and they only got one of the assignments out of the class all day.
Our number is 702-258-3552, 702-258-3552, if you want to join our conversation. Lawrence joins us from Las Vegas. Lawrence, thanks for calling. Welcome to the program.
Yes, my pleasure. I would like to say that I'm probably a little older than most of your panelists there, a black man. And I've noticed that a lot of things that I experienced back in my youth, and I'm still experiencing today. For instance, you'll go into a store, and as now, and the clerks will usually kind of ignore you. Or if you're standing, let's say, at a counter, and the clerk isn't there, and you're waiting for the clerk to return, and another white person comes up beside you, the clerk will come back. He'll kind of look at you both, and then turn to the white person and say, can I help you? As opposed to saying, who was next? Now, I'm not saying that happens every time, but it has happened many times more than I care for it to happen. And I've talked to other black people in my office and around, and they said they've experienced similar things. I mean, there's a myriad of things we can say, but that's the one point that I want to make, that some of the things just never change. It's like we just ignore, just like you were in the 50s, or in the 60s, you know, when we have time, we'll wait for you. The old excuse is always, oh, I didn't notice you, or I didn't see you. Well, how can you not see me? I'm the biggest black thing here, you know?
Yeah. Lawrence, thanks very much for your call. Pat Spearman, you spoke of covert racism in the North, and it sounds like that's a little bit of what Lawrence is talking about.
Indeed. And, you know, and I think when I speak cultural competency, that's not limited just to an education environment. I think that employers at all levels, managers, supervisors at all levels, have a responsibility to humanity to make sure that their employees are treating people like people, because money is not black, brown, or white. Money is green. And if you don't treat your customers with respect, there are always other options. So, you know, what Lawrence is talking about is, it's really, I say it's always a matter of ignorance. They ignore the fact that people are people, and they're operating at a visceral level, which they've been taught to be suspicious, taught to hate, taught to discriminate. Those types of things, people aren't born with that. People learn those sorts of things. And so one of the ways to unlearn them is to give employees financial incentive. You have a policy of non-discrimination, and that's non-discrimination, period. There are no exceptions, and you have a zero tolerance. And so when people exhibit exhibit behavior that says they want to discriminate, they want to treat people as less than, then you take them aside one time. You know, if you like this job, this is the way we do it here. This is our culture here. We do not operate in a culture of isms. And so I think the cultural competency, you know, piece goes across all stratas when you start talking about why people treat each other differently.
Thanks again, Lawrence, for that call. 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. The NAACP is holding its annual convention in Las Vegas for the first time. It's running this week, and we've got a panel of African-American leaders. We're with us talking about the state of the African-American community in our neighborhood. Our panelists include Assemblywoman Dina Neal, represents District 7, State Senator Patricia Spearman. Pat Spearman represents District 1, and Trish Duran, who is an activist and the author of the book Beyond the Glimmering Lights. And if you have some experiences you would like to share with us, we would like to know how life is for you. It's 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552, or write us at knprnews.org. Eric in Henderson joins us now. Eric, thanks for calling and welcome.
Hi. Thanks for letting me speak.
Certainly.
You know, I've experienced what Lawrence said, and but I boycotted that store. They don't know that I did, and a lot of other people that I know of. But also, the representative Neal and Spearman, they sound as that like they have got the same kind of upbringing that I received. I wasn't taught racism, bigotry, and stuff when I was growing up as a little black boy. And I've been here about 11, 12 years now. I've been able to, and I want to skip to something else, and that is there are a lot of accomplished black families in here in this valley and from around this country. It's nice to know that one of the first black representatives, well, the first black representative in the state of Nevada was Mrs. Neal's father. My father was one of the founders of the United Auto Workers. But, well, a lot of, and I can trace my history back to at least 1750. But my point is, sometimes when you want to get out there, we have to let the kids know that are in school now. Don't let other people of your own culture stop you from being able to go out and volunteer in the community, because you get a lot from volunteering. You get to forget who you are, kind of, but you get to help everybody. And people see you when you get out there, even especially as young African American boys and girls get out in the community and you volunteer to help other people, not just your own kind. And you get great rewards from that. And basically, that's all I want.
All right. Eric, thank you very much for your call. 702-258-3552. 702-258-3552. Terry joins us from North Las Vegas. Terry, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm an honor guard in the state of Nevada, and what I find to be the problem I hear all the time is that blacks cannot govern. Now, you hear that with the President of the United States. They say he cannot govern. Now, in terms of the West Las Vegas area, what I know quite a bit about, American Legion Post 10 has to be rebuilt. The Moulin Rouge has to be rebuilt, as well as the Town Tavern. And see, that sends a message to people that we do have a history of governing. And so it's very important that we listen to that, because people are getting the image that black folks cannot govern. They can't even govern their own lives. And I'm tired of it. I hear it all the time at the American Legion posters. So those are issues that has to be addressed. And my closing is this. As I walk through the halls of Mandalay Bay, there are a lot of blacks that come to this Las Vegas and don't know the history of West Las Vegas. And that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Terry, thanks very much. Really appreciate your call. 702-258-3552. Giovanni joins us next from Las Vegas. Giovanni, welcome. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing fine, thank you.
Awesome. Hey, I just want to comment that I think as black people, we need to stop crying and stop, I guess, doing the blame game. You know, I mean, I grew up in Oklahoma and in Detroit with lots of racism in Oklahoma. But, you know, that don't hold me back. You know, that's just something that happened. I mean, I have my own business now, and I have my children working with me. And as far as the education thing, I mean, we're like, you know, the schools need to do this, the school needs to do that. Look, it is the way it is, and the parent needs to do it. My wife, she stopped going to college for a year and a half to get my children caught up when I got custody of them from my first wife. So it's all about the parents. It's not about the schools. I mean, the schools are the way they are, but we need to stop crying and complaining. You know, if we go to a store and a store treats us bad, don't shop there. But, you know, and I just kind of feel like some of these leaders are kind of out of touch. I mean, we talk about hypotheticals, but we need to talk about what it is and tell people what to do instead of, you know, crying about what's going on.
All right, Giovanni, thank you very much for your call. 702-258-3552. 702-258-3552. Andre joins us from Las Vegas. Andre, welcome to the program.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
All right. Hey, just a comment on just about everything, just a culmination of everything everyone said. And I'll tell you, and I'm a 22-year retired veteran from the military. I was in this last fight over in Iraq. And I will tell you what, you know, we our history is always aligned with one thing in America, and that's just racism. That's the biggest thing that we align ourselves with. But what I want people to understand is this. We're not the only race. African Americans are not the only race that has ever been enslaved. Every ethnicity around the world has been enslaved one time or another by them, by people of their own race or of other races. But I guess the issue is this. We have a black president. And he has already shown everybody, not just in the United States, but around this world, that we can achieve anything. All we have to do is do just like the last gentleman said. The parents got to take charge of what their children are going to learn or what their children are going to be involved in. You know, you got all these distractions like video games. You know, kids don't do what we did when I was a young kid. I went outside and played. Today, they get all their exercises just on their thumbs. Get them outside. Yeah. Be involved in your kid's life, and it'll change the spectrum. You know, I hear a lot about how Las Vegas has kept people out, in particular about the Moulin Rouge when they didn't let blacks gamble downtown. They had to gamble on a specific side of town. Well, you know, you had other entertainers like the guys that were in the Rat Pack that refused to allow that by coming over to the Moulin Rouge until they changed the rules. Because they wouldn't let Sammy Davis Jr., as popular as he was, to go downtown. Now, come on now. You know, everything has changed in America. And one of the things, and I want to turn it around, where they said we couldn't do things and that we were expected to be at a certain level in our life, that has changed. When I was in the first grade, I had a teacher. She was a Caucasian lady, and she told me, and we had this thing called Career Day back then. She said, what do you want to be when you grow up? I said, I want to be a doctor. She said, oh, no, you can't be that. You have to be somebody that work with your hand, okay? Mm. And then I couldn't be that.
Yeah.
And to me, that was wrong.
Yeah, that certainly sounds wrong. And Andre, forgive me. We're just kind of pressed up against the clock, but thank you very much for calling. Really appreciate hearing from you. I want to turn to all of you in the panel. At the convention, there is undoubtedly going to be a lot of talk throughout the convention about some of the setbacks the organization, the NAACP, has recently faced. Gutting of the Voting Rights Act by the Supreme Court this year, the inability to repeal Stand Your Ground laws. As you look at the conference and just kind of assess things, what is the state of the civil rights movement today as you see it? Pat Spearman, let's start with you.
Well, you know, I think every movement has multiple periods of evolution and multiple times when there are some setbacks that actually become a setup to do a lot better. The things that appear to be a challenge to someone else may be something that actually sparks that fire, that passion, if you will. And so I think the things that you mentioned were disappointments in terms of the NAACP. They're finding ways to work around that, though.
Mm-hmm. Assemblyman Neal?
I think it's missing youth engagement at this point. The 2018, literally, to 40 have lost engagement in the civil rights movement. And I think there's a need to realign and reengage.
That's the big challenge.
Yeah, it's a huge challenge. And I know the Southern Nevada Black Elects have come together, and we've taken on a series of activities in order to do community building, in order to do alignment, and actually have real talk within our communities and say that, you know, it's not all the fault of, you know, institutions. Yeah. Yeah. It's actually you have to take responsibility, to do something.
Mm-hmm. Trish Jarn, I'm going to give the last half minute or so to you.
Yeah, I think the civil rights movement, we still need to address everything from their roots when it first occurred, because anything that's happening, still happening now, I noticed that the root of it actually started probably around Reconstruction days during Lincoln times. There's some things that's still going on. Absolutely.
Mm. Trish Jarn is an activist and the author of Beyond the Glimmering Lights. Senator Pat Spearman represents District 1 in the Nevada Senate, and Assemblywoman Dina Neal represents District 7. Thank you all very much for joining us. Great having you here.
Thank you.
The